Bet365 is paying out before the final whistle.
Check out Bet365's unrivaled early payout offer. When you bet on a team to win and they take a 17-point lead, you get paid no matter the final score. Forget the final whistle and start counting that cash. Hold up. You get early payout on parlays, too.
Download the app and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply. Listen up, football fans. You won't want to miss this.
Right now, new Bet365 customers bet $5 and get $150 in bonus bets, win or lose. So you could turn that $150 into something bigger when you bet on Moneyline, Spread, Total, Player Props.
$150 in bonus bets when new customers bet $5. I know where I'm going to bet from now on. Download the app today and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply. In-app only.
Hey, what's up, guys? Welcome back to Strikeout Bros with Lasha and Pablo. Very interesting week in baseball. And it was fun for both of our clubs. The Mets did well, and so did Baltimore. You know, not to be biased, those are our teams, but I just want to say that they definitely deserve the light right now. Everybody's watching and wondering what's next for both of these ball clubs. And I'm very happy to say that the Mets are finding themselves. Baltimore always had it. They showed a lot of, you know, signs of championships coming soon to you, the fans out there. And the Mets, man, I don't know. After that 0-5 start, going to Atlanta and proving ourselves in a 2 out of 3, I'm proud of these guys. It's fun to watch when the team is exciting and they have chemistry and they're able to see the ball well. Because it shows that there's a future. There's a future out there for us. We can compete. When everybody thought that team wasn't even going to be able to do that this year. And I like it. I like it. This is one of the most exciting seasons in a long time. So let's get right into it, Lash.
Yeah, man, what's going on, man? So this week we're going over the week of April 14th, that week that was, like you said, it was an exciting time for both of our teams. Maybe not so much for Atlanta because they lost 2 out of 3 to the Mets, and not only did they lose 2 out of 3, they got shellacked by the Mets in the last game, 16-7, I think.
So, it was bad. It was bad.
It was a surprising... As an Atlanta fan, I was like, what the heck happened? Do I need glasses? My eyes? Something's wrong? But no, that's what the score says. Scores don't lie.
Remember a couple of years back when the Mets were going to, you know, they were looking good. They looked like they were playoff bound. And it was me and you. I went out there to visit you in Atlanta. We went to a 3-game series at Truist Park. And, you know, I remember the Grom was going to pitch the last game. I think that was the game I was most excited to see. But we went out there and we stayed for every single game. We stayed all 9 innings for every single game. And there was one game. It was horrible. It was like a super shellacking, right? It was like 20-something to like barely anything. And we had fun. Even though, you know, my team got destroyed, the park is beautiful. The people are great. The energy was great. And let's put it like this. You know that when Atlanta hits home run, the fireworks, a lot of fireworks that night for the Atlanta Braves. It was horrible, but I still had fun. It was like reversed this time around, which I like. I always like getting last licks, you know? So I enjoyed that beatdown. I know you remember that day.
No, I definitely do. But going over this last game, the crazy thing about this last game of the series that the Mets played in against Atlanta this past week, the Mets were down 4-0 going into that last game. And I just like, okay, we got this. We should be able to win this game, meaning Atlanta.
Yeah, of course.
You know, okay. Mets tend to struggle coming back, but I was completely wrong. They just ground their way. They ground their way at the grindstone and got the runs, and they got to the starter. And as y'all know, you know, they lost with the Braves last Strider. They lost Strider for the year. So that was a blow. But I got to give my hats off to the Mets, man. You guys look great. I was very impressed by the offense. The offense is starting to show, which is really important because, as you know, and you might not want to admit this, but your pitching staff is awful. With Cody Senga out, you really don't have a number one starter anymore. So they're putting the pieces together.
Yeah, but exactly, we're putting the pieces together. The funny thing about that, you know, on paper, when I first saw the rotation, I'm like, oh, man, we're going to have a horrible season. But the Mets are, you know, they're leading in a lot of, you know, numbers. So, like, we're up there really high, like top three in ERA for rotation, bullpen, and as a collective as well. So, all right, you can say, you know, the names, you don't like the names, you know, the Severino, right? You have Manaea, you have Sengayao, you have Budo. These guys are really going out there and giving us their all. So it's funny how these pitchers that aren't superstars are becoming a force together. It's like they're picking each other up. And I like it. We don't have to have big names. It's kind of like when we had Taijuan Walker, we had the Bassetts, right? And we had these people collecting wins throughout the year, you know? When you can win over 10 games for your club on the mound and you have the next guy stepping up and doing the same, this is how you make it to the postseason, you know? It's not about, you know, having the elite out there. It's about having that good chemistry and having everybody pick you up when you're down and helping each other with information, you know, based on when you come up to the plate and you see something that can maybe help the next guy coming up to the plate, you know, that's how baseball should always be. You know, you have to communicate. You have to be able to say, all right, I saw this, you know, funny moving curveball. Don't fall for it. It's going to start high and it's going to drop dramatically. Look out for it. Look out for this. He likes to throw these fastballs in the corner. As you can see, you know, this information is going to help the club throughout the season. If they're communicating and they have good chemistry, they're going to be able to get places like that. You know, like I said, yeah, we're like the Bad News Bears. You know, we don't have like amazing talent. We don't have Ohtani, you know, filling up the stadium. We don't have, you know, these great elite pitchers, you know, that people want to come to the park and see. But we have people
that... No more DeGroms.
No more DeGrom, you know. But we have these pitchers that are going out there and giving us their all. And that's what's important.
No, that's very important because, as you know, your bullpen is very shallow. And it's hard for them to get from the starting to the end once the starter leaves. And unfortunately, the Mets don't have depth in the bullpen department. But as long as your starters are going 5-6 innings, the bullpen can hold up, I think. So I think the Mets starters are doing well. And
they're building a bridge. They're building a bridge.
Yeah, that's it. But anyway, so as you all know, this week, another top-tier prospect in the majors was called up by the Texas Rangers. His name is Jack Leiter. He is the son of former Major League great, Pablo, you would know as a Mets fan, the great Al Leiter. He pitched for the Mets and the Yankees majority of his career.
Yeah, he did. I loved him. He was a great guy, you know, and he went out there and he pitched his ass off. He definitely did. And the funny thing about his son is that I think he's going to excel to that same level his dad did. His dad was very competitive and he was a leader. He definitely was. So now, Mr. Jack Leiter.
Listen up, football fans. You won't want to miss this.
Right now, new Bet365 customers bet $5 and get $150 in bonus bets, win or lose. So you could turn that $150 into something bigger when you bet on Moneyline, Spread, Total, Player Props.
$150 in bonus bets when new customers bet $5. I know where I'm going to bet from now on. Download the app today and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply. In-app only.
First outing wasn't so, you know, so good, but we went 3 2/3. They were able to win and beat the Tigers in Detroit. He allowed 7 runs, which is, you know, pretty horrific for your first start in the major leagues. You're never going to forget it, right?
No, but definitely not. He'll remember that day.
You know, he walked 3, struck out 3. But it's a, you know, it's a foundation. It's a foundation. It's hard. You know, you come up, you know, the nerves get to you. And, you know, your dad, you know, was out there doing great things, putting up numbers. And all you want to do is impress your dad, you know, and you want to try to excel and do better than he did. But it's okay, though. First start. What can you say? I'm not shutting him down. I'm not saying, oh, he's trash. We'll find out. We'll find out.
No, definitely. You just gotta give it time. It's gonna work out its kinks. You just gotta be patient. Like I said before, we live in a world where we want instant results, and unfortunately, in sports and anything in life, instant results is not something you're gonna get. You have to wait. You gotta just let the game play itself out. Let his game play himself out. Don't put pressure on him, because that can sometimes mess with their mind. For these players that are just coming up, it's pretty impressive. He just got drafted in 2021, and 3 years later, he's already pitching. It's pretty impressive how quick he made it to the majors.
Yeah, some guys never make it. Some guys, you know, have to sit in the minors for 8 years, you know, and that takes it out of them. But I guess, you know, he impressed a lot of people, and they think he's ready. They think he's ready. It's going to take time, but we're going to see what happens. It's a long season. You know, he might be a pivotal piece in their run, because I know they're going to end up back in the race. They are. Texas, no, you know, can easily repeat. Will. Yeah, they can easily repeat, you know?
Yeah, and for the Rangers, as you know, they're still waiting on Jacob deGrom and Max Scherzer to come up. So by having those two guys on the IL, this opened the door for Jack Leiter. If those two guys were back, they would have not called up Jack Leiter, but they're in a need of pitching desperation. And let's say, you know what, let's give him a shot and see how he does. Like I said, it's only one game, so I'm not going to sweat it. Like I said, you know, yeah. give him a couple starts, see how he does. I think he'll be fine. But anyway, the next topic at hand is the Pittsburgh Pirates relief pitcher, Mr. Aroldis Chapman. As you know, he came up with the Cincinnati Reds. He won the World Series with the Chicago Cubs. And he spent some time in the Bronx with the New York Yankees.
Yeah.
But he was suspended recently, 2 games, I believe, for undisclosed amount of inappropriate actions during Monday's game against the Mets. Do you know what that's all about, Pablo?
Yeah, I was there for that game. And it was funny because, you know, when you see Chapman coming out of the bullpen, you're like, damn. If you're down, you're scared because you don't think you're going to be able to produce against this guy. For some reason, the Mets were on fire. You know, the Mets ended up sweeping Pittsburgh. And I guess he was going to come in and stop the bleeding, and he thought he was going to, you know, be the old Chapman that played in New York for a long time and was lights out. But it didn't work out like that. And this guy, he was getting upset at the umps, and they were rocking him. They were rocking him. It was great to see. And he was mouthing off to the umps, and the umps caught it, and he got tossed. And the frustrations of a guy like that, when you get called up to the mound in late innings, you know, your job is to stop it, to make sure they don't score. That's not what happened. It was pretty funny, you know, for a Mets fan, of course, not for Pittsburgh. Pittsburgh has been doing really well this year, and they're going to miss him for those two games. They're definitely going to miss him.
Yeah, did you know exactly what he said? Were you able to hear it?
No.
While you were there, or just too loud?
Nobody really knows what he said. Nobody really knows, you know? And, you know, he covered his mouth with his glove, and he was mouthing off. So nobody really knows what he said, but it must have been something really deep that offended the umps. So see you later, Mr. Chapman. See you later. Like I said, the Mets ended up sweeping those guys, and those guys were frustrated. They're having a great start to the season, and it's fun to watch. It's fun to watch to get a pitcher frustrated like that, because he knows that the opposing team is just doing their thing. No matter who came up that day, the Mets were ready for it. They're explosive right now.
Yeah, definitely. Now, the thing is, losing Chapman two games is nothing because he's not a starter. If that was a starter and he was a good starter for them, that'd be two good starts you just lost. So losing him for 2 days, he's like, all right, that's just rest. Chapman is great. He's not as good as he was when he first came up, when he was with the Reds and the Yankees. But he still has an effect on the bullpen, and he can get in there. He still throws gas.
Yeah, he's still throwing gas. He's definitely still throwing gas, yeah.
Nothing worse for a pitcher than when you know all your arsenals, all you're throwing out is just completely going to the wayside. Nothing's working. Your fastball's not working. Your curveball, especially he's known for throwing that fastball. He got gas. And when that's not working and players are getting to it, I'd be pretty mad too, and I'd be saying some explicit things. So I could understand his frustration. Yeah. I don't think it was frustrated at the umpires. It's just, you know, when you're mad, you just take out your anger at the closest person, and that's what he did. So I don't think it was a personal attack on the umpires. It's just, what are you going to do, go after everybody on the Mets? You can't do that. So umpire is the easy target. But it's what it is for Pittsburgh. It helped the Mets. They scored runs against him, and they slapped him around. And that's what you're supposed to do. When in baseball, when you see somebody struggling and the other manager is not taking that guy out, and you got attack him as long as you possibly can, because if you don't, you know, you're not taking advantage of the situation. So the Mets did the right thing and they took advantage of it, and good for them. So I'm not to worry about Pittsburgh or Chapman. Two games is nothing. That's 2 days off, essentially. If he was a starter, like I said, it'd have a major effect, because, you know, when you lose a starter for two games, that's two starts, that's two possible wins, especially if he's one of your top three pitchers in your rotation.
Mm-hmm. It hurts. Any top of the order, you know, pitcher getting tossed out for two games is going to definitely hurt your ball club. That's a fact. All right. And we're going to move on to the American League Player of the Week. Guess what team he plays for? The Baltimore Orioles, once again. It's funny. Colton Cowser, right? He was a top five pick out of Sam Houston State. Went 10 for 23 with four home runs during six games. Oh, my God. I wish I had talent like that on my team. Young talent at that. Excuse me. But, yeah, he goes out to Fenway, and he drives in 10 runs in a series, a three-game series at that, which is pretty insane. That ballpark is hard to play in, and man, that's crazy. Apparently, nobody's done that in like more than 70 years, you know? 10 runs in a series at Fenway, that's pretty impressive. You gotta, you know, I tip my hat off to Mr. Colton Cowser.
It's definitely impressive because in that series, he hit a grand slam. I believe it was in the last game of the series.
Finish your year with your dream kitchen with help from Menards. Clearview Cabinetry offers a selection of finishes made with the finest materials and built to withstand life's sticky messes. They provide features like soft closed doors and drawers and cabinet accessories to match your unique style. Don't wait to finish your projects. Save big money on Clearview Cabinets and check out our weekly flyer on Menards.com for more great deals happening now. Save big money
at Menards. Hit a grand slam, and he hit a moonshot. And you know how, like you were saying, Boston, that wall is really tall. It's really hard. So to be able to hit a grand slam against Boston like that, and that ballpark, it's pretty impressive. And, you know, Boston doesn't have a – there's no low porch. There's a low porch in right field. But besides that, to clear a home run, he hit a dead smack all the way to the left field, cleared that wall with no problem. But, yeah, he's been doing great. Like I said, he's like you said, he's a former prospect, top-tier prospect in that amazing farm system that Baltimore has built up. And last year they called him up. He struggled a little bit. But he's the future outfielder for them, and he's had a great year, which is great. He's picking up the pieces is what you need because Baltimore has had some struggles. One of their outfielders, Austin Hayes, has been struggling mightily. He just went on the IL recently. So to have a bat like Hauser pick him up and pick up the offense, you don't really realize that your other star players are struggling. So I'm very happy that he's doing really well. So it's fun to see these guys make their comeuppance and see them do well on the major stage.
Yeah, all those lonely years at the bottom of the totem pole. You know, you end up getting all these great prospects, and you guys have built a great team, and it's starting to show now. It took a while, but you guys are starting to show now. You have so many pieces. It's fun to watch. It's fun to watch. A young ball club in the American League East, very hard division to play in. These guys are having no problems. They're competitive. They're having fun. They're hitting the ball.
No, they definitely are. And Baltimore's last home game in that series this past week, they had played the Minnesota Twins. They swept the Twins to continue a four-game winning streak.
Yeah, you won the last game.
And in that last game, yes, and in the last game against Minnesota, Cedric Mullins hit his first walk-off grand slam ever. It was amazing because the announcer for the Orioles, Mr. Brown, was like, how amazing would it be if this guy hit a grand slam right here? And they're down by one, and he hit a grand slam, and they won. I was like, wow, this is a pretty impressive that Kevin Brown, the announcer for the Orioles, kind of like spoke it into existence. So it was really cool to see. And Cedric Mullins, man, he's a seventh-round pick. Everyone thinks he's a first-round pick. No, he's a seventh-round pick, and he's just a diamond in the rough that they found. And when he's healthy, I like him more for his defense than his offense. He's more of a line drive hitter on the offensive side. He's not a power bat. But defense, man, he's made like four like top 10 plays this year already. He covers that center field so well, and that's why he reminds me of Byron Buxton of the Minnesota Twins, who they just faced, who's also fast and covers a lot of ground in the outfield.
A lot of ground.
Yeah, so it was really impressive to see. But,
yeah, all these young guys are becoming household names, and I love it. It's pretty great. It's pretty great, you know. After all those years down, you guys are coming up. You have a lot of artillery. You know, you have Kowser, Henderson, Westberg, Ryan O'Hearn. You know, you guys are definitely doing good things out there.
So definitely. It's pretty amazing. But as you know how it's amazing. The one thing I love about baseball, Pablo, is that week to week, everything changes. Things can change. You know, one week you're doing great. The next minute you're doing horrible. And in case of the New York Mets, 2 weeks ago, not even, they were 0-5. Everyone's starting to hit the red panic button and like, oh my goodness, here we
it's
go.
It's over already. Exactly.
Yeah,
it's
I know you were thinking that. You can't
say
you weren't.
Of course I was. I'm a Mets fan. We know how it works.
Exactly. And to see themselves crawl out of it, and now they're what, like 10-8, I think, in this current week. It's pretty impressive.
Yeah, it is. But, you know, injuries start to happen. For example, we lost our starting catcher already. Thumb injury. 2 days in a row. And he was rounding first, and he slipped, headed towards second, and he hurt his thumb. We're out for, I think, 8 weeks now. So when these things start to happen, you start to see a decline, you know, because when you have all these great pieces and they're all connecting, you start to succeed, and then you lose a piece. So now you have to figure out, all right, how are we going to get around this? So they ended up calling up Thomas Nido, and Narvaez is going to be the starting catcher now. And then Nito's going to catch every other day, I guess. But Alvarez is going to be missed. And this is when, you know, you find out what type of team you have. You know, can Tomas Nido pick up the pieces? Can Omar Narvaez excel? You know, when we got him from Milwaukee, he was the starting catcher behind, and then we had McCann. McCann didn't really work out for us. And when we called up Francisco Alvarez, Narvaez had to take a step back and say, all right, I'm older, I've been around for a while, and this young guy is going to, you know, take my place, but I'm going to have to figure out how to contribute and how to stay hot. Omar's going to get less at bats, and he's going to have to, you know, work out of the bench and be ready for those moments when he's needed. And now, without Alvarez, Omar's going to have to step up and show them that he's the man for the job. You know, we're not going to expect much from Tomas Nido. You know, he's not a great player, but we just want him to focus on what he's doing right now and help this rotation, you know, excel. But, you know, a lot of injuries are going to start happening. You know, like we all know, the pitching injuries all over the league have been super dramatic. And it's going to be interesting to see how all these ball clubs that have winning records try to stay afloat. Because you can easily, you know, lose 3-4 games because you don't have all your pieces. And that's always the excuse. Yeah, you know, we did well last week and now we're down 2-3 players. We don't have our full club. And you start to lose games and you start to think, all right, this is probably why. But if the people coming in to replace these players do their part and show that they're capable of holding it down while Alvarez, the Striders, get back, then you have something to look forward to. You know, it's like chess, you know. Once you lose your queen, then you have to completely think differently. I think that Alvarez is definitely the future of our ball club. I don't think we have to look elsewhere. He's electric. He's young. He's fun to watch. And he's doing really well. He didn't play a lot last year, but he was still able to accumulate 25 home runs. And that's impressive for a player that played less than half a season. You know, so this season started, I'm like, wow, we hit 25 last year. And if he plays the whole season this year, I can only imagine how many home runs he's going to hit. He has a real serious power bat. And he's really short, so it causes pitchers to have to adjust to that because, you know, the strike zone changes depending on your height. So you have to really adjust to these really short players like the Altuves, and because the strike zone changes really dramatically. And you have to throw a little lower to get it in the box. And he's going to be missed. He's going to be missed. But I'm looking forward to seeing how Narvaez and Tomas Nido adjust to his absence.
Yeah, it's a lot of pressure for those catchers, for Nido or Narvaez. But I've always said this before, the catchers are like the quarterback for baseball. They help control how they got to be able to catch different types of pitches, different types of speeds. And they can control where the movement of, you know, where they control the game essentially.
Yeah, for I agree.
For the pitcher. And if a catcher can catch any pitcher, man, that makes your team, that helps your team greatly. You know that, all right, when these two guys throw pitch and catch to each other in the game, you know the game is in full control. So losing Alvarez is a tough blow, but thank goodness it's only a thumb sprain. So 8 weeks, it sounds like a lot, but it goes by fast. But, you know, with that being said, the Mets have been really impressive. They've won 9 out of 12 games And with that being said, I believe they've won four straight series. Is that right?
Four. Yeah. We're going to the West Coast after this series. Right. So we took two out of KC and we took three out of the Pittsburgh Pirates. And we're going to be traveling to the West Coast and we're going to be playing the Mighty Dodgers, which is going to be fun to watch because we're doing really well. And we are playing a lot of big teams with great records. And we're pretty much going through them like they're bottom of the pile type teams. And it's impressive. So I'm looking forward to that series. And hopefully we can come back, you know, 500. I would love to win four out of six, but it's going to be tough. San Francisco is doing well. And the Dodgers, oh my God, they're ready to win it all. They have so many pieces. And even if somebody went down over there, they would be okay. They would be okay. I believe they don't even have, what's his name? What's the big man over there that is down, the pitcher? His name is Kershaw. Kershaw. He's down. Yeah. He's down right now. He's older, but he's a threat. You know, he can definitely win a lot of games for you. Kershaw's down, and it's not even affecting them. You know, they have Yamamoto. They have Ohtani, who's not even pitching right now. But he's still producing.
Glasnow.
You know, they have a lot of good pitching, and it's scary. And the bats, Mookie Betts, Freeman, Will Smith. They have a lot of good.
James, you know, Outman, my favorite name, by the way. I love that name. He's the outfielder for the Dodgers. Outman, I love that name. But, yeah, the Dodgers are great. And like you said, if you can come home
4-2 or even 500. Even 500 would work for me. You know, that would work for me.
3-3 would be great. So,
yeah. Yeah.
San Francisco is no slouch. I don't think of San Francisco as the great team. They did spend a lot of money this offseason, so I'm confident the Mets can take two out of three from San Francisco more than I am confident that the Mets can take two out of three from the Dodgers. But who knows? I could be wrong. If the Mets' winning streaks continue and they continue to play hot, they could definitely easily take two out of three from the Dodgers. But, yeah, it'll be interesting. I'm excited. I like the call-ups for the Mets. It's good. They have good backup catchers. Nito, I've always liked Nito. He's a great emergency backup. He's not a superstar, but he can catch these pitchers and he can, you know, kind of hold the fort down until Alvarez comes back.
Yeah.
And if you rotate between him and Arias, who you got from Milwaukee, I believe, in free agency last year, then you're good. And that's all you can ask. We're not asking him to, you know, 300 or above the Mendoza line and, you know, have 17 home runs. That's not going to happen. Just control the pitching. That's all we ask for.
That's all we ask for.
But, yeah, speaking of pitching, this past Saturday, Garrett Crochet, the starting pitcher for the Chicago White Sox, he is currently up to 31 strikeouts and 4 walks this season. That's the most strikeouts in a pitcher in the first 4 starts in the White Sox franchise history. It's pretty amazing. He's surpassed
Bruce Howard, 27. He had 27.
Yeah, it's pretty amazing, man. What's your thoughts?
I think this guy is the future of this ball club. They're struggling right now, but with talent like that, you can see the future. You can see the future. This is a guy that is never going to be available. Pitching like that, this guy is an asset to this ball club. And I feel like, you know, when you're a losing ball club and you start to see signs of, you know, the youth performing like this, That's an asset that, you know, you can build around. You know, those are amazing numbers. That's top of the rotation type numbers, you know? And if you're going in there and doing that type of work, man, every 5 days you say, you got this one in the bag. And that's what you need from a starting rotation. Somebody that can go in there and say, you're not scoring today. We have Crochet on the mound. And if 2 runs can win a game in a situation like that, all right? Even if the ball club is having a bad day, you score 2 runs and this guy's lights out on the mound, that's a win. Even in, it doesn't matter who you're playing. You can have the best lineup in front of your eyes. this guy's that talented, you're good to go. Two runs can win you the game. Doesn't matter if it's a lineup like the Dodgers. Doesn't matter if it's a lineup like the Yankees, where you have a lot of power bats and they're ready to perform and score 10 runs on you. This guy will definitely stop the bleeding. It's a perfect example of what Corbin Burns did in the last game of Milwaukee. They were going to get swept, right, when you guys played Milwaukee the other day.
Yep.
Corbin Burns came in and said, nope, this is not going to happen. I'm here to perform, and we're going to stop the bleeding. And that's exactly what happened. You guys have a four-game winning streak because Corbin Burns decided that he was going to shut them down, and you went into that series in Minnesota and swept them. This is what I'm talking about. This is what this guy is showing right now at a young age. So let's talk about how, since we're talking about the Dodgers a lot, let's talk about what Mookie Betts is doing for the Dodgers right now. He's breaking a lot of records. You know, I knew this guy was good when he played for Boston, and I still can't understand why Boston let him go, because Boston likes to spend money. And Boston, you know, that's a household name. That's a franchise player. You get rid of him, and then he goes to the Dodgers. I would never do that. That's like getting rid of Nimmo or getting rid of an Alonso on my side. You know, like, these players are franchise players. They've been with the ball club all their lives, and they're amazing pieces. People actually, you know, dig into their pockets to buy tickets to see players like this play. And that was a super loss for the Red Sox. Now he's a superstar in L.A. Doesn't matter where he's at. He went from the American League to the National League and hasn't missed a step. So he has 2 5-for-5 games with the Dodgers. That's crazy to me. That's crazy to me. He's, you know, one of three players that have more games going 5-for-5, you know? Like, that's crazy to me.
No, it's definitely amazing. And before I forget, Mookie Betts was not a free agent. Boston Red Sox traded him because they knew they would have to give him a big contract. And Boston is going in a different direction. They kind of want to, like, rebuild the system and start their way back. So that's why they traded him to the Dodgers. And like you said, he hasn't skipped a beat. He's been amazing for them. I think he's more of an asset than Freddie Freeman is.
I agree.
I think he'd be more of an asset than Shohei Ohtani. The one thing I like about Mookie Betts, man, he doesn't get hurt, man. He's out there, and if he does get hurt, he's not out for long. And that's really impressive. He's the best availability is availability, and he's always available, and that makes that lineup very dangerous.
Yeah,
when you have a Mookie Betts type. And his defense also, he plays defense out there. He's fast. He plays that left field, no problem.
Left field, second base, shortstop. They don't know what to do with him, and they keep trying to, like, you know, figure out where he's best at. But this guy's able to play multiple positions. He's super fast. If he gets on base, he's a threat to steal. He has an amazing eye. He waits for his pitches, and he's producing. I'm sorry, but he's like one of the best players in the league right now. He's playing for those guys. I don't like those guys at all. It reminds me of the old Yankees. I mean, the old Yankees, not so much the old Yankees. Like the Yankees, like the 2009 Yankees where, you know, they're like, all right, let's try to get all the best players on this ball club. Let's try to make this an all-star team. And that's what the Dodgers did. But this guy, you know, he's classy and he's out there to play and impress. And I love players like that. So even though he plays for those Dodgers and they're always in the postseason and they seem to be doing everything right, and it's the team that everybody wants to play for in the NL, he's definitely that player, you know. I know he's pushing jerseys and fans love him. Great asset for the Dodgers. Great asset.
Yeah, and he's the second Dodger to have a multi-RBI games surpassing Cesar Torres, who did it in September of 2003. Imagine being that team that's facing Mookie Betts and knowing that he's going to go 5 for 5. How do you stop it? Do you just walk him all 5 times, or what, if you can't just walk him all the time?
Can't walk him, because if you walk him, he's in a steal second. That's
he'll steal second, and then the other pitchers got to come up, other players, and then what happens is if you walk him, the other players get on. Then you get a Freeman that comes up, or a Tani. He's on base. They hit a home run. That's 2 runs right off the bat. So yeah, it's a hard strategy.
It's a scary lineup, man. They have, I think, Mookie Betts leading off, right? And then they have Otani, or they'll flip it and throw Freeman in there and then throw Otani third. Like, come on, man. You're going to start off the game and you have to fight these three guys right off the bat? That's crazy. It's a hard start, you know? Their first 5, 6 players are pretty elite. After the 7, 8, 9, not so good, but the first 5 players and those first 3 players, you have to really think about what you're throwing over the plate when you see these guys waiting for it. It's dangerous. It's very, very dangerous. And like you said, not only are they good offensively, defensively, man, Otani as a pitcher next year for them, that's just going to be icing, you know? It's crazy. And Freeman, what a classy guy, you know? I love that guy. And he played for Atlanta for so many years, but I always loved him. He's very classy. He goes out of the play. He's always smiling. And he performs, you know? He's very relaxed at the plate, and he has amazing energy.
And he plays great defense.
Yo, does he? I'll never forget that. I remember that was my division. He was in my division for a very long time. But I never had any problems with this guy, you know. He's a classy player. The Dodgers have a lot of classy players, you know. I love it. I love it. I love it. You know, they're really good, but they don't have that arrogance about them, you know. Because they put these players together, you would expect them not to gel as well. Because, you know, when you have a lot of stars on your team, there's a lot of hate. There's a lot of, you know, negative energy because you want to, like, outperform the guy next to you. But it doesn't seem like that's what's happening over there. They're constantly in the playoffs. You know, when you sign a contract with the Dodgers, you know that you're going to be playing that extra baseball. These guys are out there. They try to win every year. They win over 100 games. They're a special ball club, you know. I understand the money, you know, help collect all these players and put them there because they spend a lot of money to get these players. But you know what? A lot of them are classy guys. They're classy guys. And if I was a player coming up, of course, you know, if the Dodgers offer me the same amount of money the Mets did and the Mets were rebuilding and you look over and you say, damn, that team is stacked. They have a lot of great stars, a lot of future Hall of Famers. You say to yourself, they're offering me the same money. Even if they offered me an extra $100 million or, you know, like, that's a lot of money, right? But it doesn't matter because you look over and you say, that team right there looks like they want to take it all. Not once, but multiple times. So, and even if they make the playoffs and their run is stopped by a mediocre ball club or a team like the Phillies who can, like, be really great in the postseason based on their lineup and their pitching. They don't win a lot of games, but in a short series, they can really hurt you. You know, you say to yourself, let me play over there because I know I'm gonna be an important piece to this ball club and I want to try to contribute. I'm going to try to make the team even better than it is already. Those are the teams that upcoming players and free agents wants to play for. You know, this is why the Mets, no matter how much money they have, are going to always have a problem. You know, if they don't show what they're capable of doing with the young ball club they have right now, nobody's ever going to say, I want to play for those guys. You know, because money isn't the end all in baseball. After, you know, you make 100, 200 million, who cares about the money at this point? You're living comfortably. You pretty much can get anything you want in the world. you want to win a championship. You want to see those rings. You want to see those rings, and you want to play competitive baseball. It's not about the money at this point, you know. And these players, you know, they get these big contracts and they have to make decisions, and they feel like, all right, I have the money. People love me. I can contribute to this ball club, but are they ready to win? I want to play competitive baseball. Because at the end of the day, this is why they play the sport, because they love the sport and they love the game and they want to win. Nobody wants to make $300 million over the next 10 years on a losing ball club. That's understandable.
No, that's not the goal when you sign big contracts.
Exactly. And this is what I love about baseball. You know, you want to surround yourself around winners. You want to surround yourself around positive energy, you know.
Great talent,
you know. You want to have fun. You know, losing 100 games in a season, can you imagine how that feels, knowing that your team isn't good enough and you're going out there, you're batting 330, the rest of your team's average is below that. And you're the player bringing all these fans to the game, right? And you're unable to put this team on your back and win games. There's only a few players out there that can actually say, you know what? I can truly carry this team on my back, you know? And it's hard. It's hard. The game of baseball is really hard to play. I've always said that any baseball player can catch a football, and they're all professional players and they're athletes, you know? So I feel like anybody can catch a football, learn how to catch a football and run and try to evade, you know, guys and earn yardage. Any player can learn a triangle defense and learn how to pass and shoot a ball into a basket. But I don't think it works in the reverse where you say, okay, you stand up there with this bat and try to smoke a 100 mile per hour fastball that's coming at you. When you hear it sizzling when it's coming at you, I think that's super hard to do. And in reverse, playing defensively, I think that when you hit a 100 mile per hour fastball and it's rolling towards you on a pool table type of surface, because, you know, those fields are immaculate. So that ball hits the surface and it's ripping towards you at 115 miles an hour if you hit it properly. You know how hard it is to focus on that ball, grab it, and throw it? It's not the same. I think that baseball is like one of the hardest sports out there. Granted, you get a lot of, you know, resting because, you know, you have to sit on the bench and wait for your turn. And I think that makes it even harder because, you know, you go through highs and lows and you have to wait for your turn. You're not moving at a quick pace like you would on football and basketball where you're running up and down the court. So, yeah, you need more stamina to play football and baseball. But I think baseball is like one of the hardest sports if you think about it.
No, it definitely is. It's very impressive how these guys can, first of all, throw 100 plus miles per hour, let alone hit a ball that fast. I know I wouldn't be able to, and I'd probably get whacked by the ball. If I got hit by one of those pitchers, that'd be have severe bruises. But it's pretty impressive. These kids are talented. They're strong, and they're only getting stronger and younger. You know, they're getting stronger at a younger rate. You know, like 17, 18 years old, these kids are throwing 100 miles per hour, which is dangerous because it causes injuries like you have now. But it's what it is. But anyway, with that being said, one of the things we like to do on this show is to point out the best pitcher of the week and the best hitter. So for this week's Gunslinger of the Week is Boston Red Sox starting pitcher Tanner Houck. I believe I'm saying that right.
Yeah, I think you are.
He had a masterful outing on Wednesday, tossing 3-hit shutout with 9 strikeouts, no walks, and he was able to do it under 100 pitches. Impressive. Which is pretty impressive. The last Red Sox pitcher to do that was Clay Buchholz in 2014. He just did it in 98 pitches. And it was really amazing. The game was done under 2 hours. Isn't that amazing?
Yeah, it's amazing. For baseball? Oh, my God. This guy was just like, give me the ball, shoot. Give me the ball, shoot. He's just being, you know what? That works a lot too. You know, like if you're fast, you know, you have to pitch. I think that you have to, you know, hurt the batters that way. You know, like if you're pitching at a fast clip and being very productive in that way, where, you know, you're not giving these batters time to think, it helps your outing, you know, because these guys never really get comfortable at the plate. And if you know how to switch up your pitching and switch up your velocities, I always said that, you know, all right, you're a fastball pitcher, right? And you want to throw three fastballs at a guy. You know, this guy is getting used to your timing and getting ready for that fastball. You have to be able to switch up your velocities and switch up your directions, and you have to be able to, you know, have command and know who you're pitching to. And this guy has it down pat, it seems like it. I mean, you're able to produce an outing like that and do it under 94 pitches, man, I don't know what to say to that. And a 3-hit shutout is, oh my God. And this game is almost impossible. You know, the average is, it's hard to keep, you know, listen to me. You can go 3-for-10 and you're batting 300. So that's how hard it is. You know, you would say, oh my God, he's batting 300. That's amazing. No, it's really not if you think about it. It's just how hard it is to hit. Because, you know, 3 out of 10 gives you a 300 average. And that's crazy to me. That's how hard it is to hit any pitch in baseball.
No, it definitely is.
It's a lot of failure. It's a lot of failure, you know?
Yeah, and it helps because if the hitters have never seen this guy, which I've never heard of, so he must have been new, at least someone they have not faced before. And that helps a lot, too, because if they don't know what you throw and how you throw, the hitters just can be baffled by his performance.
Yeah,
I believe the last guy to do that was on the Detroit Tigers, Mondo Galarraga. He's the one that, as you famously remembered, they took away his perfect game against the White Sox over a play where it was a clearly out at first. But at the time, the major leagues didn't have instant replay, challenging reviews. And because of that, Mondo Galarraga, who was a great pitcher for the Tigers, lost that perfect game. But anyway, in that game that he pitched, he had beat the Cleveland Indians at the time back in 2010, and the game was done in an hour and 45 minutes, which is pretty impressive. So to be in that realm of pitchers to do that for Tanner Houck, he was pretty impressive. But Pablo, I got a question for you. This might hurt you a little bit, but who was our slugger of the week?
You're so funny. I hate you. So the slug of the week is Travis Darnold, right? This guy played for the Mets. It came to the point in his career with the Mets where I couldn't even understand why he played in the major leagues. I'm like, if this guy's going to play like this, I feel like I can do way better than him. And you don't even have to give me as much as he was making back then. You can give me half of that. You can have me on a $500 a week salary, right, where I'm going to go out there and give you my best. This guy couldn't peg anyone at, you know, this. He couldn't peg anyone stealing. He couldn't hit. He couldn't do anything right. He couldn't even catch. Like, I don't know what happened to him. I'm like, all right, once we get rid of this guy is never, ever going to play Major League Baseball again. Wrong. Not only does he move on to the mighty Atlanta Braves, but he becomes a force. All right? So this guy hits, he had a 3-homer game the other day, right? And he's hitting like a machine. He's catching well. He's doing everything right. I think the pressures of playing in New York really got to him. Atlanta's like baseball country, you know, and the fans out there, they really appreciate that. Their players, and they root for these guys as if they were family. And man, this guy's the third Braves player since 1901, right? Because to hit a grand slam in a three-homer game. You know how hard it is to do that? Not only does he get three home runs, one of them ends up being a grand slam. And Bryce Harper did it a week ago or 2 weeks ago. He had a three-homer game. And Shane Langelier, who plays for the Oakland A's, did the same too. So we've been seeing a lot of players like really rake at the plate. It's crazy to me. But Travis, out of all people, man, you would never think that. You would never think that. But I'm happy for him. I'm happy for him. He found a home and he's able to produce for this ball club and be productive. And he's playing really good ball, you know?
He's filling the shoes for Sean Murphy, who's the starting catcher for the Braves, but he's been out for a while, so they need a replacement. He's done a good job. I'm impressed. And, you know, back when he was with the Mets, I remember we used to talk on the phone all the time, bashing this poor guy over the head. You know, they got Darnold in that trade originally from the Toronto Blue Jays for R.A. Dickey and what's his name?
Syndergaard.
Syndergaard.
We ended up getting Syndergaard, right?
It was a good deal, looking back now, as far as starting pitching.
It was, because you know what's funny about the situation? I believe they got Syndergaard, and they threw in Travis as a, you know, we don't want this guy, take him too. It was that type of deal. It was, you know, I can't believe it. Syndergaard was okay for us for a while. Travis, you know, started high and ended up super low. And like I said, the pressure in New York probably got to him. I mean, we're not talking about the New York Yankees, where you get booed if you don't perform properly on a daily basis. Because Mets fans aren't really like that, you know? I mean, if we're being competitive, right, and we're playing at home at Citi Field, and a player that's making a lot of money and is usually performing well, doesn't do well, the fan base doesn't really boo a player like that. That's not what the fan base is like at Citi Field. But at a place like Yankee Stadium in the Bronx, man, an Aaron Judge, who the fan base really loves, can easily get booed on a daily night if he doesn't produce properly. And, you know, that can hurt a player. That can, you know, get into a player's head. So it's different. It depends on where you play and what type of fan base you have, you know? But the fans need to understand that it's a really hard sport to play, and there's going to be a lot of highs and lows, and they have to give the player time to adjust and figure it out. And they have to understand that a lot goes into the sport. It's not, you know, a real, like, mechanical sport in that sense. When there's a pitching change, you have to adjust to the timing of that pitcher. You have to wait and figure it out. It changes from pitch to pitch as well. So this is how hard it is to hit a ball, you know? So you have a pitcher that, you know, has five different pitches in his arsenal, and you have to adjust to every single pitch. And you have to, you know, wait, you know, because if you're early, you know, you're falling off. If you swing too fast, and if you wait too long, there's a lot of things that go into play on a, you know, pitch by pitch basis on an at bat. And this is why it's hard, you know. This is why it's really hard to play, and this is why I appreciate these players. They make it look like it's really easy. And when they boot a play and they make a mistake, you know, you're easily, you know, upset and you want to frown on that player. But you have to understand that it's a really fast sport when the ball is coming at you at 115 miles per hour and you have to make a decision on how you're going to move, how you're going to capture the ball, and how you're going to throw it. And if you try to throw it too fast, your accuracy is off. There's a lot of, you know, things that go into play on every single pitch. And it's not easy. It's not easy. You have to remember that. You have to remember that. Understand it's your team. You spent money. You go into a stadium and you spend $150 on concession alone, not including your ticket. you try to find a cheap ticket and you still end up spending a lot of money and you want to come home with a win. You want to say, I had a good experience, but you're having a good experience, in my opinion, as soon as you walk into the ballpark, you know? It's supposed to be fun, whether or not your team wins or loses, you know? You're there for the experience.
Yeah, and not only that, you go there because you want to see your best players do well. You don't go there like, well, I hope the guy on the bench, the no-name yo-yo, comes in and he's a grand slam. That's not what you're going there for. You're not going there to see a backup guy. Now, that backup guy has to come and play, great. But, you know, we tend to, as fans, you know, the reason why, you know, the saying fans is in fanatic because we're crazy. We don't think rationally. These players are human beings. They make human errors. That's just the way it is. But we as our fans, we think with our heart and not with our brains. So we tend to quickly want to get mad and upset. Like, why did he do that? Why did he throw the ball away? Or why did Darnold not make that catch? Or, you know, why did, you know, Cody Senga, you know, spike the ball, you know, so we get mad easy. And you can't remember, these guys are human beings. They make errors. But at the end of the day, you know, they're getting paid the big bucks for a reason because they're really talented. It's very hard to find. Not a lot of people can throw a ball 100 plus miles per hour. Not a lot of people have the strength and to hit a 100 plus mile ball coming at you in a blink of an eye. Literally, with one blink, that ball's already in your kitchen, literally. So it's pretty,
it is
amazing.
It's amazing. So I was thinking really crazy right now, right? So you see how the Texas Rangers, right? They have this problem, right, with Scherzer and DeGrom, right? These were elite pitchers, you know, a couple of years ago, right? And then they have Jack Leiter coming up now. All right, so Scherzer hasn't pitched in a while, right? Which is kind of like works for the ball club because nobody's getting at-bats through these guys, right? DeGrom. Mm-hmm. And let's happen to say they get healthy, right? And they stay afloat and they end up in a playoff situation, right? And Jack Leiter figures it out, right? So you have Jack Leiter coming in game one and he happens to win. Then you have Scherzer who hasn't pitched yet, right? And DeGrom who hasn't pitched yet. And they go in there and they blow out the opposition. That's a super threat. That's like a super rotation, right? So not having these guys around right now and these players on the opposing team not seeing them and getting at-bats to adjust to what they have and what they're able to offer a ball club is pretty scary, right? Because it's like having a Pandora's box is sitting on the side, right? It's like, man, if I open up this box at the right time, they can go on a like 20-game win streak. This is the type of ball club that we're talking about. Not only are they're the champions, right? They're the defending champions, right? So if they make the playoffs and these guys, you know, are able to come up at the right time where nobody's seen them all year and you have these young ball clubs now that have never seen these guys at all, you know how difficult it's going to be even for like an amazing lineup like the Dodgers in a World Series. You know, let me give you a weird example because I don't want to see this, but let's happen to say the Dodgers end up playing the Texas Rangers because they end up making it all the way to the big show, the World Series, right? So you have Texas versus the Dodgers because, of course, everybody's expecting the Dodgers to, like, run through and mow down everybody in their path, right? And they make the World Series, right? So they have Yamamoto, they have Glasnow. And let's happen to say that Kershaw makes his debut, you know, sooner than later, right? Or the other way around where he's unable to pitch for, like, the majority of the season, but he comes in late in the season to boost up the rotation, right? So now you have DeGrom and Scherzer who haven't pitched yet, and they come in late in the season too. So that means less of a look for the opposing team and harder for them to hit the ball. Imagine, these games are going to be amazing for a true baseball enthusiast, you know, because it's going to be all about the pitching at this point. There's going to be a lot of whiffing. Nobody's going to hit the ball. And it's going to come down to who makes the first mistake. That's going to be an amazing World Series.
No, but, definitely. That would make it very interesting because you don't know when the next hit's going to come.
Exactly, because these guys, we're talking about elite pitchers, you know. All right, he was unable to contribute. He was unable to win 10 games this year because he wasn't around. But then once they do show up, they can become a really dangerous rotation on both sides, you know. But my predictions, not because, you know, like I said, I don't want to be biased, but I would love to see the battle of the orange. You know, I would love to see Baltimore go against the Mets, you know, AL East versus AL, you know, NL East. And I would love to see these two ball clubs. I know Baltimore is definitely going to make the playoffs because they're a force. They have a lot of young guys. They're thirsty. And they did well last year, and they can only get better. And with the additions of Corbin Burns, you know, I feel like they can definitely get to the next level. The Mets, you know, we have the money. We have David Stearns. If we continue to play well, maybe we can get another arm in there. I mean, listen, we don't have Sengai yet. So maybe he can come to the ball club and make a difference. But it's going to be interesting. So we're coming to the part of the show where I ask you a trivia question. I like to, you know, try to stump you and, you know, mess with your head. But you're so good at this that you might know the answer to this. Who was the first MLB franchise to retire a player's number? And who was the player and what was his number?
Well, the one franchise that comes to mind who has the most amount of retired numbers is the Yankees. They have the most retired numbers. So I'm going to go with the Yankees as a team. And I'm going to go with a guy by the name of the great Lou Gehrig. His number was number 4. And it's funny you're talking about retired numbers because this is a subject for another time. But the problem with retiring numbers is you soon to run out of numbers. So the question I have, and this is for another podcast, is will we ever see a time in baseball where we'll have players wearing triple-digit numbers? They do it in the KBO, as you know, which is the Korean Baseball League. And I've watched some of the Korean baseball games on YouTube, and it looks normal to me. I don't notice anything, but it'll be interesting. Yankees are notorious for retiring numbers. In my opinion, they seem to like retire all, you know, all the guys that they have retired the numbers. They were great players. They didn't just retire some no-name player. So don't get me wrong. Lou Gehrig is one of the best Yankees. When I think of the Yankees, I think of Lou Gehrig. So he was an all-time great. You know, it's like with the Mets, same thing. You think of, you know, Strawberry, you know, and all these guys that they retired. So, yeah, I'm going to go with the New York Yankees, Lou Gehrig, number 4.
100% correct. And the funny thing about the Yankees, right, I agree. I think they retire way too many numbers. But you have to also remember that they're, in all of sports, have the most championships, right? So you have to imagine how many great players went through that system to be able to win those championships. So they knew how to do it from very early on. So, all right, the other day they retire Dwight Gooden's number at Citi Field. They're going to retire Strawberry's very soon as well. And, you know, they retired Keith Hernandez. All these guys played under 86 Mets. We don't have a lot of championships, right? But a lot of the older fan base remembers.
Tom Seaver.
Exactly. Tom Seaver, right? So you remember, you know, as a Mets fan, you always remember those championship clubs and how great they were. So imagine how Yankee fans feel, right? When they say, oh, yeah, we retired another number. Of course we did, because we won so many championships and a lot of great talent came through here. So it's understandable, but at the same time, you're right. A lot of players' numbers are getting retired. It's going to come to a point where they're not going to have any numbers left, you know? And when I look at the Mets, it's weird because you see a lot of these new players wearing these numbers that you remember really well, you know, like 20, for example, 20 is the polar bear, Pete Alonso, right? And then you say to yourself, wow, Hojo, Howard Johnson, who also played for the 86 Mets, wore that jersey, you know? So,
and he was an underrated player. That was a guy that people tend to forget. He contributed greatly to those Mets.
He did.
He wasn't the star, but he was a big contributor. People forget that.
He was a great piece, exactly. So, like, then you go a little further up, right, and you have a player like Tyrone Taylor who just came from Milwaukee, right, and he's electric. So the Milwaukee Brewers decided that, you know, he was on the older side and he was up for contract and they didn't want to pay him, right, because they were like, all right, we don't really need this guy, but the guy plays really well. And they gave him number 15. So 15, in my eyes, when I was younger, was Carlos Beltran. And I know that because I had his jersey and I thought
I remember Beltran.
That Carlos was an amazing player. I remember how we got him. He played in the postseason prior to the season before coming over. And he hit like 8 home runs in the postseason for Houston. And we're talking about back in the day when Houston still had that hill in center field. And he played out there, and it was really difficult to play because you had to remember that you had that ramp up there. That ramp, you know, this is what I like about baseball, that people don't seem to, like, you know, notice. But every single field that you go to is slightly different from the next. So you have to adjust to that. And that gives the home team a serious advantage. Like, we spoke about it earlier. Fenway Park, left field is crazy. Like, what type of force and what type of angle do you have to hit it in to get it over that monster, right? And then, like I said, in 2014, a little before that, when, you know, they had that ramp, they removed it eventually, but the dimensions of a ballpark change every 3 days, every 4 days, depending on where you're going and where you're traveling to. You know, so it's interesting to see shit like that. Excuse my language.
No, it definitely was. And that was the advantage for him. He knew how to play that field and he played it well. So it was an advantage for Houston to know how to play that dimensions of that ballpark. But anyway, with that said, as we're coming near to the end, for all you listeners, feel free to email us at StrikeoutBros.
Definitely. It was a great episode. I hope you enjoyed it.
Hey, tune guys for a special episode that's coming out. See ya, man.
Stay tuned.